to the Jet Boy Show at FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday morning. We do appreciate you listening. Joining us now on the line, always a pleasure to introduce my next guest from the Washington Examiner. My good friend Eddie Scarry is joining us on the line. Eddie, how are you?
Doing good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time. I know you're busy trying to keep track of what's going on, but I'm on the air, obviously, during this trial, so I don't really have my own. I'm kind of relying on a lot of news accounts. But what is your assessment of what's going on so far
in the Chauvin trial?
Yes, in the Derek Chauvin trial. I apologize.
That's okay. I'm watching pretty closely as much as I can. I've seen just about, I think, all of the witnesses, but I've missed parts here and there. I did see most of the opening statements of both the defense and the prosecution, and so far, the most compelling evidence, I guess you'd say, is the video. There was a new angle that they kind of introduced. There was the video that we saw last year, that was the initial one. You're kind of obstructed by the squad car that was in the way.
Right.
This one, you could see it from the other side, and I think it was a little bit more graphic. You would have a more of an emotional response to this. But it is only the beginning so far, we've only really heard the case from the prosecution. We haven't got around to all the details just yet that will be the case that will be made by the defense. So it's a little bit too soon to say anything. I don't think that right now we've got some witnesses who have been a little bit more compelling in that the bystanders who were there, several of them recording on their own devices the actual attempt to subdue George Floyd. And, you know, some of them are still emotional right now. I think right now still there's an 18-year-old on the stand who started crying watching the video and recalling her experience. So there is some that I do think will be effective with the jury. But there's a lot of this story to be told still. I referenced the video they talked about at the beginning, or they showed at the beginning. That is not the only video. We need to see actually the first 20 minutes where police first engaged Floyd. We see that he was resistant to arrest. He was non-compliant with any attempt to address him really at all. He threw himself to the ground multiple times. He was screaming, saying things that really didn't make sense, talking about how he couldn't breathe before anyone even was holding him. There's a lot of information yet to come.
Yeah, because last night, kind of watching the media coverage of it, Fox News or Greg Jarrett on Sean Hannity's show was like, no, there was enough compelling evidence put out there yesterday to say that to convict Derek Chauvin of what he's being charged with, like second or third degree murder, and that it's almost case closed. And then a little bit later, there's the possibility beyond a reasonable doubt. Was there some other circumstance that led to the passing of George Floyd? Could it have been fentanyl or something like that? But how compelling do you think this is? Do you think it's kind of leaning toward the prosecutor right now?
I think yes. Again, we're only 2 days in, and we haven't heard the whole story. I think the defense has kind of alluded to some points he'll be making when it's actually time for the defense to present its case. He was trying to get people to put themselves in one of the police officers' shoes, or if they were a police officer in this case, but in particular if they could see themselves with Derek Chauvin, who is like 5'9", 160 pounds or so, and George Floyd, who everyone could see on in the videos that we will eventually see that they will bring to court before he ended up on the ground. This 6'4", 250-pound or 225-pound man acting erratically, not complying with any requests by the officers, resisting arrest, which is even the state, the prosecutors even acknowledged that in their initial complaint that he was resisting arrest. They're getting into that. They will end up having to get into the examiner's report, which is very important, about the drugs in his system, the potent amounts of drugs in his system. And the way those two drugs operate is also going to be interesting, because he had both stimulants and sedatives in his system at the same time. Those two things competing in a body, chemically competing in a body that has a heart that was severely weak. The medical examiner said his heart disease was severe, George Floyd's, that is. What were the factors there? Did they play a role in him actually dying? Was this just a freak accident? And, you know, you got to keep in mind that these police officers, they're responding to a criminal complaint when they initially contact George Floyd. They don't know who they're going to come across. To say nothing of understanding what his medical history is. They don't know if he has a bad heart, how they should be treated. They just see that this man is erratic. The witnesses who were there that called the police described him. They thought he was drunk. They said he's not in control of himself. So this is their mindset going there. And so those are going to be a lot of things for the jurors to think about. It really is going to complicate, I think, their decision. And that's the hard part for the defense, is they don't want this to be complicated. They want this to be, you know, all you needed was the video of Derek Chauvin on Floyd's neck. All you need to know is that the way that looks, that should be enough for you. Well, no, there are a lot of complicating factors here. You know, the media narrative has been always what the defense is kind of built around, which is just this video, and that this has to do with a white officer kneeling on the neck of an innocent black man. Well, there are just other factors here that lend itself to actually show that this may have just been a freak accident, a tragic event about a guy who had a bad heart.
Well, that's the problem. The media seem to be, as they always do, overhyping the circumstances here. But my thinking, and just this is, you know, watching a little bit of the media coverage, if the media are setting up something, if for whatever reason Derek Chauvin is acquitted, that they're setting up something really bad to happen in this country.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that the riots that we saw last year is just going to look like Coachella in comparison to what we see when obviously if and when there is an acquittal, but also when the defense starts making its case, because the liberals in the media have been, they refuse to give the context that I was just providing a minute ago about the heart disease, about the drugs in his system, about the non-compliance with the police. They don't want to talk about any of that. They just have created this narrative and reinforced it over and over again that this is a race, this is about police and black people, when really the evidence of that is very small. So if we get an acquittal, people, the media are even saying it now. Eugene Robinson, liberal at the Washington Post, said that, you know, this is not just the trial of Derek Chauvin. The whole criminal justice system is on trial. And what he's implying there is that if the verdict doesn't go my way, which is a conviction, then this was a miscarriage of justice. This is yet more proof that the justice system doesn't care about black people. Well, no, again, there are a lot of factors here. We have to trust the jurors to be presented with all the information, digest it, deliberate it for as long as they need to, and then come to the conclusion, is Derek Chauvin guilty of I think there's three charges, second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and then there's also, I guess, manslaughter. So was he guilty of any one or all of those things? They're going to have to make that decision, but that's the way our justice system works. It's not, well, we liberals in the media have a predetermined outcome that should happen, and if it doesn't, then it failed. No, that's not the way things work here.
I mean, they have so tied politics to this case that it's almost too big to fail for the left. And if it does fail, then I think we're setting up for some kind of big time civil unrest here. But you know, all throughout that January 6th episode, they take Donald Trump off of social media. They don't even show his press statements or press conferences. They don't want to, because the fear is that he would incite another insurrection or whatever. But this seems just profoundly more serious, it could be a lot worse. There's clearly a double standard at play here.
Yeah, I don't think that there's any doubt that so much of the media will be directly responsible for any unrest that we do see. And I think that it should be completely taken for granted that we will see a lot of it if there is an acquittal. And I think it's just because you've had the media refusing to provide the necessary context, all the facts and information, instead reinforcing the narrative over and over again that this has to do with race and police and racism and white supremacy. And the way they're setting it up now is just with sowing doubt about the justice system if there is an acquittal. That is nothing more than really they're having it both ways, because, okay, if there's a conviction, that is proof that this was about race and it was about a white cop and an innocent black man, and that this is that systemic racism is a thing and that white supremacy is a thing. If there is an acquittal, it's basically the same thing over again. Well, the justice system is biased. It's because of white supremacy. It's because of racism. It's because of cops and systemic racism. And you know, so almost either way you go, it's they win, but the rest of us lose.
Yeah, it was just no media accountability there, and it's sort of, you know, this is like the ultimate kind of gaslighting situation. But you do sound to me like you do think that there is still that possibility that there could be an acquittal when this is all said and done.
Yeah, I actually would say, as I've been following this and I watched the evidence come out and more videos came out over the course of the last, you know, 10 months or so, initially what you see and what the media said it was is at the very least a lot more complicated than what they said. But as time went on and as more information came out, I thought it was more likely than not that Derek Chauvin will be acquitted. And I still pretty much stand by that. I would put it probably around 65-70% that he's acquitted. And it's simply because, again, that the standard is high, and it's high for a reason. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt, right? That is the standard. That's a high standard for a reason, because you don't want to end up making the mistake and putting an innocent life away in prison. And, you know, again, all these other factors, it's a very strong case to say, look, they were responding to this intense situation. They had a struggle with this massive guy. He was on drugs, and then it turns, and they couldn't get him, they couldn't subdue him, and finally his heart, it looks like it just gave out. It was ready to give out under any kind of stress, let alone an interaction with cops. And it was just a confluence of events that's really unfortunate, but that's the way it is. I can make that case in my head. I think many jurors would have the same thought process.
Well, and that is, you know, where this heads, I guess, you know, well, do you think this, given the venue, Minneapolis, Minnesota, and what's happened, I don't know how close you've been watching that part of it, the jury selection, but do you think it is possible that the jury is not, you know, contaminated somehow?
I read some of the reports that were coming out about jury selection. Most of the people, I would say, to your larger point, it's pretty much impossible to get a pure jury pool, just because the coverage of this was so saturated. It was everywhere. Everyone had seen the video. I believe every single one of them had seen the video. They all showed the video again, actually, as they were going through the process of being selected. Pretty much everyone said they were disturbed by seeing it. But they otherwise had expressed confidence in themselves to come to this, and also they said, I'm willing to accept new information that changes the course of, you know, my opinion. So it doesn't look like a jury, or at least from what my initial impression was, not that this is a problematic jury, but you know, again, to your larger point, everyone has been tainted by this, so we'll just have to see.
What other cards does the prosecution have to play? I assume they've done some kind of deep dive into Derek Chauvin. I know he has kind of a checkered history as a officer of the law. This is going to take some time to play out, it seems.
The trial?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that they're estimating 2 weeks to a month long. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes a little bit longer. I think that I thought, actually, there were certain witnesses yesterday that I thought for sure they would have kept the defense, when they were cross-examined, they would have kept them on a lot longer, but they actually went through them pretty quickly. But I won't be surprised if we see that going further, especially probably when it comes to, I assume they're bringing the medical examiner, and that will probably be a really long testimony, possibly stretching days. But no, I think it's possible that this goes for a long time. I would say that's probably more likely than not.
Well, something I've heard from you know, these pundits that come on, and they've been underwhelmed by the defense. They thought the defense could have done a better job yesterday. What's your assessment of Chauvin's defense?
There were only a couple points that I think that he made them, and that they could have come across as insensitive. For example, he said that Floyd, his nose, you could see his nose bleeding as he was on the ground, and that's because he himself hit his own face against the plexiglass window of the squad car. I mean, that just sounds kind of, well, that happened because he was in a struggle with police. I mean, I understand the point he's making. And then the other point he made was that the police were distracted by the crowd that was growing, so that prevented them to some degree of attending proper or the best care possible to George Floyd. I mean, I think that can kind of come across as insensitive. But again, I also don't think that you would want to see the defense, when this whole narrative is built up about, you know, Derek Chauvin knelt on this man unnecessarily long and possibly killed him. I don't think you want the defense lawyer coming out guns blazing and revealing and completely trying to dispute and refute every single point out there in a very strident or abrasive way. But again, I think people just have to remember that this is right now the prosecution's case. They made the opening statement, but the real deal is going to come down to the defense's case when it's their turn and the closing arguments.
Well, and we'll be watching it. Hey, Eddie, I know you're tight on time here, and we appreciate you taking time for us this morning. If folks want to find you on social media, check out your book or anything like that, can you tell them where to look?
Find me at eddiescary.com. It's two R's.
All right. Eddie, as always, we appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hey, Scary, ladies and gentlemen, with the Washington Examiner. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5.